awakenings of the intuitive eating style that has always been a part of you, but was buried under the debris of dieting. When you enter this stage, much of the exploration work from the previous stage begins to crystallize and feels like solid behavior change. Your thoughts about food are no longer obsessive. You hardly need to maintain the hyper-consciousness about eating that was originally needed. Consequently, your eating decisions don't require quite as much directed thought. Instead, you find that your food choices and responses to biological signals are mainly intuitive. You have a greater sense of trust, both in your right to choose what you really want to eat, and in the fact that your biological signals are dependable. You are more comfortable with your food choices and will start to notice increased satisfaction at your meals. At this point, you honor your hunger most of the time, and it's easier to discern what you feel like eating when you are hungry. You continue to make peace with food. What feels new in this stage is that it's easier to take a time out in the midst of your meal to consciously gauge how much your stomach is filling up. You will be able to take note of your fullness and respect the presence of that signal, although you may find that you often eat beyond the fullness mark. Just like when an archer takes aim at a new target, it often requires shooting many arrows before learning how to reach the bullseye. You may still be choosing previously forbidden foods most of the time, but you will find that you don't need as much of them to satisfy you. If you've been an emotionally cued eater, you'll become quite adept at separating biological hunger signals from emotional hunger. Because of this clarity, more often than not, you will be experiencing your feelings and finding ways to comfort and distract yourself without the use of food. Remember to put weight loss on the back burner. Far more important than weight loss is the sense of well-being and empowerment that begins to take place. You won't feel helpless and hopeless anymore. You will begin to respect your body and understand that if you're over your natural weight, it's a result of the dieting mentality rather than lack of willpower. Stage 4. The intuitive eater awakens. By the time you reach this stage, all of the work you have been doing culminates in a comfortable, free-flowing eating style. You consistently choose what you really want to eat when you are hungry. Because you know that you can have more food of your choosing whenever you are hungry, it's easy to stop eating when you feel comfortably full. You may begin to find that you choose healthier foods, not because you think you should, but because you feel better physically when you eat this way. The urgent need to prove to yourself that you can have previously forbidden foods will have diminished. You truly know and trust that these foods will always be there, and if you really want to eat them, you can. So they lose their alluring quality. Chocolate starts to take on the same emotional connotation as a peach. You won't need to test yourself anymore, and your deprivation backlash with food will be gone. When you do choose the foods you used to restrict, you will get great pleasure and feel satisfied with a much smaller quantity than ever before, and without guilt. When you feel guilty eating a food, it takes away much of the pleasure from eating. If coping with your feelings had been difficult for you, you will be less afraid to experience them and become more adept at sitting with them. Finding healthy alternatives to distract and comfort yourself when necessary will become natural for you. Your food talk and self-talk will be positive and non-critical. Your peace pact with food is firmly established, and you will have released any conflict or leftover guilt about food choices that you have carried around. You have stopped being angry with your body and making disrespectful comments about it. You respect it and accept that there are many different sizes and shapes in the world. At this point, and if it's meant to be, your body will be on its way to approaching its natural weight. Stage 5, the final stage, treasure the pleasure. At this point, your intuitive eater has been reclaimed. You will trust your body's intuitive abilities. It will be easy to honor your hunger and respectfulness. Finally, you will feel no guilt about your food choices or quantities. Because you feel good about your relationship to food and treasure the pleasure that eating now gives you, you will discard unsatisfying eating situations and unappealing foods. You will want to experience eating in the most optimal of conditions and not taint it with emotional distress. You will feel an inner conviction to give up using food to cope with emotional situations, if that has been your habit. When emotions become too overwhelming, you will find that you would much rather deal with your feelings or distract yourself occasionally from them with anything other than food. Because your eating style has become a source of pleasure rather than an affliction, you will experience nutrition and movement in a different way. The burden of exercise will be removed, and exercising will begin to look enticing to you. Exercise will no longer be used as a driving force to burn more calories. Rather, you become committed to exercise as a way to feel better, physically and mentally. Likewise, nutrition will no longer be another mechanism to make you feel bad about the way you eat. Instead, it becomes a path to feeling as physically good and healthy as you can. When you reach the final stage, your weight will settle into what is natural for you, a place that is comfortable and appropriate for your height and body frame. If your weight was already normal, you will find that you will maintain it with no effort and will be rid of the emotional ups and downs that accompany the restriction overeating cycles. At last, you will feel empowered and protected from outside forces telling you what and how much to eat and how your body should look. You will feel free from the burden of dieting, and you will be an intuitive eater once again. You can do it. These stages and the changes that occur with your eating and thoughts may seem impossible, or it might seem too scary. For example, the thought of giving yourself unconditional permission to eat may seem terrifying, and you might fear that you will never stop eating or gaining weight. The remainder of the book explains in great detail how to implement each principle, why it is needed, and the rationale behind it. You will also learn how other chronic dieters became intuitive eaters and how it changed their lives. By the time you finish listening to this book, you will know that you too can become an intuitive eater and stop the madness of dieting. Chapter 5. Principle 1. Reject the diet mentality. Throw out the diet books and magazine articles that offer you false hope of losing weight quickly, easily, and permanently. Get angry at the lies that have led you to feel as if you were a failure every time a new diet stopped working and you gained back all the weight. If you allow even one small hope to linger that a new and better diet might be lurking around the corner, it will prevent you from being free to rediscover intuitive eating. If you're like most clients we see, the idea of not dieting can be scary, even when you know that you can't choke down one more diet plan or drink. It's normal to feel panicky about letting go of dieting, especially when the world around you is on some diet. It has been the only tool you have known to lose weight, albeit temporarily. Hitting diet bottom is a paralyzing feeling. Damned if you diet, and damned if you don't. Many of our clients feel stuck between two conflicting fears. If I continue dieting, I'll ruin my metabolism and gain weight. And if I stop dieting, I'll gain more weight. Other common fears that we hear are fear. If I stop dieting, I won't stop eating. Reality. Dieting is often the trigger for overeating. Of course, it's hard to stop eating when you've been under-eating and restricting food. It's a normal response to starvation. You'll learn more about that in the next chapter. But once your body learns and trusts that you will not be starving it anymore through dieting, the intense drive for eating will decrease. Fear. I don't know how to eat when I'm not dieting. Reality. When you banish diets and become an intuitive eater, you will be eating in response to inner signals, which will guide your eating. This is like learning how to swim for the first time. The feeling of being surrounded by water can be terrifying to the novice swimmer, especially when totally submerged. Similarly, being surrounded by food can be terrifying to the chronic dieter, who is learning how to eat again. But you will not learn how to swim by merely standing at the edge of the pool, even while believing that learning how to swim is a good thing. First, you begin by getting your feet wet and learning how to breathe in the water. Eventually, you will put your head in the water when you are ready, and you get more comfortable. Fear, I will be out of control. Reality, control is not an issue in intuitive eating. Instead, you will be relying on your internal signals, rather than on external factors and authority figures whom you're bound to defy. Nobody can be the expert of you. Only you know your thoughts, feelings, and experiences. You will learn to trust your internal wisdom, and will learn to listen to and honor your inner cues, both physical and emotional, all of which feels empowering. The diet void. For many people, dieting has been a way to cope with life, from filling up time to serving as a symbol of control over your life. Think of the times in your life in which you started a diet. How often did your diets coincide with difficult times or transitions in your life? It's not unusual to begin a diet during the following life transitions, passing from childhood to adolescence, leaving home, marrying, starting a new job, or when experiencing marital difficulties. While dieting may have been futile, it offered excitement and hope. The exhilaration of quick weight loss and the excitement of watching the scale inch downward. The hope that this diet will be it. It's similar to going to a hairstylist for a new cut, with the expectation that it will revolutionize the way you look and feel about yourself, and maybe change your life. But when you say goodbye to the thrill and excitement of dieting, you'll also be letting go of the false hope and disappointments from dieting. There's a social element to dieting that you may miss, diet bonding. When you decide to give up dieting, you might be surprised how often new diets and dieting are the topics of conversation at parties, with friends, at work. And now you won't be playing that game. It might feel like a must-see movie everyone is talking about, only you haven't seen it and have no plans to view it either. You might feel a little left out. Detached. Remember, as long as there is money to be made, there will always be a new gimmick or diet for a quick weight loss fix. At one point, the manufacturer of a product called Sleeper's Dieter claimed to help people attain greater weight loss while sleeping. Talk about dreaming. The manufacturer was fined by the FTC for making unsubstantiated claims, but people still shelled out the money for this new gimmick. The one last diet trap. The initial step to becoming an intuitive eater is to reject the diet mentality. Yet even when you come to terms with the futility and harm that dieting unleashes on the body and mind, it can be a difficult first step, as described in a letter from a client, Lisa. I have been in the dieting dilemma all my life. Every diet I've ever been on has worked for me, at least what I thought of as worked. Worked in the past was losing a certain number of pounds, never considering the reality of regaining the weight, plus more, with each and every diet I went on. At age 36, I came to a point in my life where I was dieted out. I knew there had to be another way. Yet my first thought was to let myself find one more diet for the last time, and I would make a promise to myself to never gain the weight back through a change in lifestyle. Lisa's letter represents a common conflict of chronic dieters. You've hit diet bottom. You know dieting doesn't work, but you're desperate. Just one more diet, just this time. I'll be good. And so begins the familiar chronic dieter's plea. Just let me lose the weight now. And after I lose the weight, I'll figure it out. But as long as you cling to a small hope that a quick little diet will turn your weight around or jumpstart you into a new person, you won't be free from the tyranny of dieting. Giving in to just one more diet is one of the biggest traps because it doesn't face the reality. Diets do not work. So how could another diet truly be part of the solution? Jackie, another client, had been consistently dieting since the age of 12. By the time she came in, Jackie thought she was ready to give up dieting. Jackie made a lot of progress in 3 months, which, for her, was stabilizing weight rather than gaining weight. For the first time, she began to have a normal relationship with food rather than constant food worry and obsession. But she wanted to take a break from our work together. 5 months later, Jackie called. She desperately needed to come back. Jackie said that she finally got it. She knew once and for all that dieting creates more problems. Jackie revealed that during her initial work with intuitive eating, she had secretly hoped that a little diet was all she needed. She thought losing some quick pounds would allow her to work on her real food issues without worrying about her body, and then she would have more patience. It was part of her reason for leaving. When Jackie left, she dabbled with two serious quickie diets, which resulted in disaster. She lost 10 pounds quickly through juice fasting and intense exercise, and got excited. She was so motivated that she was sure if she lost another 10 pounds through a different food-combining diet, her problems would be over. Jackie couldn't have been further from the truth. She became more obsessed with food and began binging. Not only did she gain back every pound, she was heavier, more frustrated, and had less trust in herself with food. Every diet is like a hula hoop flung onto your body. At first, it's effortless to keep the hoop in motion. But eventually, massive layers of hula hoops disrupt normal rhythm and become binding. You cannot rotate the hula hoop. You can't even move. To get yourself out of the last chance diet trap, you need to come to terms with the fact that dieting doesn't work and can, in fact, be harmful. Remember, a body of research shows that the act of dieting increases your risk of gaining even more weight. This holds true for kids, teens, and adults. We believe that if people really knew that embarking on a diet could cause your body to gain more weight, they would not go down the futile dieting path. Perhaps you're inclined to argue, however, that you'll feel better about yourself when you lose the weight. But studies have shown that improvements in psychological well-being associated with weight loss are just as temporary as the pounds lost and regained. The good feelings diminish with regained weight, and existing issues of self-worth and general psychological function return to initial levels when the weight is regained. Pseudo-dieting. Many of our clients state, "I've given up dieting," but they still have trouble shaking the diet mentality. They may be physically off of a diet, but the dieting thoughts remain. The problem is that dieting thoughts usually translate into diet-like behaviors, which becomes pseudo-dieting or unconscious dieting. Consequently, these clients will still suffer the side effects of dieting, but it's much harder to spot, and then they really feel out of control with their eating. Pseudo-dieting behaviors are not usually apparent to the person engaged in them. Keep in mind that eating is so universal that it's hard to be objective. It can be difficult to find the loopholes in your own eating mentality, behavior, if you don't know what you are looking for. to the surprise of our clients, they often don't discover that they have been pseudo-dieting until, together, we review their intuitive eating journal. Here are some examples of pseudo-dieting. Meticulously counting carbohydrate grams is the modern version of counting calories. While being conscious of what you eat has its merits, the act of counting carbohydrate grams to control weight is really no different than counting calories. Many of our chronic dieters are pros at rationing their carbohydrate grams for the day, and they are stuck. Eating only safe foods. This usually means sticking with fat-free and or low-calorie foods beyond counting carbohydrate grams. For example, one client would not eat any food that listed more than 1 gram of fat on the food label, regardless of what her total fat and calorie intake for the day was. Remember, however, that one food, one meal, or one day will not make or break your health or your weight. Eating only at certain times of the day, whether or not you are hungry, is a common leftover habit from dieting, especially not eating after a certain time of night, such as after 6 p.m. Reality check. Our bodies do not punch time clocks. We do not suddenly turn off our need for energy at a certain time. This can especially be a problem for a dieter who exercises after work, comes home late around 7:30 p.m., and decides it's too late to eat for fear that the fat meter is in high gear. While it is reasonable not to want to go to bed on a full stomach because it would be uncomfortable, to deny a hungry body any food or energy is unreasonable. Paying penance for eating bad foods, such as cookies, cheesecake, or ice cream. The penalty can include skipping the next meal, eating less, vowing to be good tomorrow, or doing extra exercise. Cutting back on food, especially when feeling fat or when a special event such as a wedding or class reunion comes up. While cutting back sounds innocent enough, it's amazing how often this gets acted out in the form of unconscious under-eating. Remember, under-eating usually triggers overeating. Pacifying hunger by drinking coffee or diet soda. This is a common dieting trick to assuage hunger pangs without eating or calories. Limiting carbohydrates. We are struck by the number of clients who profess they know of the importance of consuming this form of fuel, yet eat an inadequate amount of carbohydrates, such as bread, pasta, rice, etc., because they are afraid they will gain weight. Putting on a false food face in public. You will only eat what is proper in front of other people. One client, Alice, ate an enjoyable meal with friends. When the dessert tray came around, she really wanted a piece of pie, but fought the urge because she wanted to appear to be the healthy, weight-conscious eater. However, on her way home, the urge for the pie swelled into an uncontrollable craving. Alice stopped at the store, bought a whole pie, and ate one-fourth of it, more than she would have eaten had she honored her true food preference. This social dieting behavior of putting on a false food face backfired, and it often does. Competing with someone else who is dieting, feeling obligated to be equally virtuous, if not more. Because dieting is viewed as a virtuous trait in our society, it is not unusual that you would get sucked into appearing virtuous. This can easily occur when friends, family, or a significant other is dieting. Second-guessing, or judging what you deserve to eat based on what you've eaten earlier in the day, rather than on hunger cues. One client, Sally, ate 2 large bowls of puffed rice cereal for breakfast after running for 1 hour. She thought that was too much food, and later in the mid-morning did not allow herself to eat, although she was ravenous. Sally thought, how could I be hungry only 2 hours after I ate a big breakfast? The reality for Sally was that while her volume of food in the morning was larger than her norm, it was still inadequate for the amount of exercise she did. Her body was trying to tell her, "I need more fuel." Yet Sally felt guilty for being hungry. She also felt guilty for eating a big breakfast until she realized that, in actuality, she had under-eaten. Just because a meal or snack does not fit the standard portion size from your dieting days, it does not mean you are overeating. Becoming a vegetarian or eating a gluten-free diet only for the purpose of losing weight. A vegetarian lifestyle can be a healthy way of eating and living, but if it is embraced with a diet mentality, it becomes merely another diet. For example, Karen began eating meatless to lose weight. But a month into her vegetarian eating, she began craving meat. Never before had she experienced meat cravings. Karen realized she never really intended to become a vegetarian. She wasn't interested in vegetarian eating for health or ethical issues, only as a vehicle to lose weight. And so her diet backfired. The Dieter's Dilemma. Whether you are engaged in bona fide dieting or pseudo-dieting, any form of dieting is bound to lead to problems. The inherent futility of dieting is explained in the Dieter's Dilemma chart created by psychologists John P. Forite and G. Ken Goodrick. The Dieter's Dilemma is triggered by the desire to be thin, which leads to dieting. That's when the dilemma unfolds. Dieting increases cravings and urges for food. The dieter gives in to the craving, overeats, and eventually regains any lost weight. He is back to where he started, with the original weight or higher. And once again, the dieter has the desire to be thin. And so another diet begins. The dieter's dilemma is perpetuated and gets worse with each turn of the cycle. The dieter is heavier and feels more out of control with eating. How do you break the futile dieter's dilemma? You must simply make the decision to give up dieting. Although the anti-dieting movement is growing in popularity, there is always a new diet or program around the corner. How to reject the diet mentality. To let go of the dieting myth and the dieting mentality, our minds require a new frame of reference. In the best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, author Stephen Covey popularized the concept of paradigm shifts. A paradigm is a model or frame of reference by which we perceive and understand the world. In the world of weight management, dieting is the cultural paradigm by which we attempt to control our weight. A paradigm shift is a break with tradition, with old ways of thinking, with old paradigms. We must change our paradigm to reject dieting. Only then can we build a healthy relationship with food and our bodies. While Covey's work is aimed at the business community, he hits upon an issue that rings true for chronic dieters. He believes that people are often drawn to remedy the problem without regard to the long-term implications of this quick fix. He feels that this approach actually exacerbates the problem rather than permanently solving it. He points to the physical body as a prized asset that often is ruined while one is on the race for rapid results and short-term benefits. Here are the steps to begin your paradigm shift of rejecting the diet mentality. Step 1. Recognize and acknowledge the damage that dieting causes. There is a substantial amount of research on the harm that dieting causes. Acknowledge that the harm is real, and that continued dieting will only perpetuate your problems. Some of the key side effects gleaned from major studies are described in two categories, biological and emotional. As you listen, take a personal inventory and ask yourself which are the problems you are already experiencing. Recognizing that dieting is the problem will help you break through the cultural myth that diets work. Remember, if dieting is the problem, how can it be part of the solution? Damage from dieting, biological and health. In every century, famine and human starvation have existed. Sadly, this is true even today. Survival of the fittest in the past meant survival of the fattest. Only those with adequate energy stores, fat, could survive a famine. Consequently, our bodies are still equipped in this modern age to combat starvation at the cellular level. As far as the body is concerned, dieting is a form of starvation, even though it's voluntary. Chronic dieting teaches the body to retain more fat when you start eating again. Low-calorie diets double the enzymes that make and store fat in the body. This is a form of biological compensation to help the body store more energy, or fat, after dieting. Chronic dieting slows the rate of weight loss with each successive attempt to diet. This has been shown in both rat and human studies. Decrease metabolism. Dieting triggers the body to become more efficient at utilizing calories by lowering the body's need for energy. Increase binges and cravings. Both humans and rats have been shown to overeat after chronic food restriction. Food restriction stimulates the brain to launch a cascade of cravings to eat more. After substantial weight loss, studies show that rats prefer eating more fat, while people have been shown to prefer foods both high in fat and sugar. Increase risk of premature death and heart disease. A 32-year study of more than 3,000 men and women in the Framingham Heart Study has shown that, regardless of initial weight, people whose weight repeatedly goes up and down, known as weight cycling or yo-yo dieting, have a higher overall death rate and twice the normal risk of dying of heart disease. These results were independent of cardiovascular risk factors and held true regardless if a person was thin or obese. The harm from yo-yo dieting may be equal to the risks of staying obese. Similarly, results of the Harvard Alumni Health Study show that people who lose and gain at least 11 pounds within a decade or so don't live as long as those who maintain a stable weight. Cause satiety cues to atrophy. Dieters usually stop eating due to a self-imposed limit rather than inner cues of fullness. This, combined with skipping meals, can condition you to eat meals of increasingly larger size. Cause body shape to change. Yo-yo dieters who continually regain the lost weight tend to regain weight in the abdominal area. This type of fat storage increases the risk of heart disease. Other documented side effects include headaches, menstrual irregularities, fatigue, dry skin, and hair loss. Damage from dieting, psychological and emotional. Psychological experts reported the following adverse effects at the landmark 1992 National Institutes of Health Weight Loss and Control Conference. Dieting is linked to eating disorders. In an unrelated study, dieters were 8 times as likely to suffer from an eating disorder by the age of 15 than non-dieters. Dieting may cause stress or make the dieter more vulnerable to its effects. Independent of body weight itself, dieting is correlated with feelings of failure, lowered self-esteem, and social anxiety. The dieter is often vulnerable to loss of control over eating when violating the rules of the diet, whether there was an actual or perceived transgression of the diet. The mere perception of eating a forbidden food, regardless of the actual calorie content, is enough to trigger overeating. In a separate report, psychologists David Garner and Susan Woolley make a compelling case against the high cost of false hope from dieting. They conclude that dieting gradually erodes confidence and self-trust. Many obese individuals assume they could not have become obese unless they possessed some fundamental character deficit. Garner and Woolley argue that while many obese individuals may experience binge eating and depression, these psychological and behavioral symptoms are the result of dieting. But these overweight individuals easily interpret these symptoms as further evidence of an underlying problem. Yet obese people do not have inordinate psychological disturbances compared to normal weight people. Step 2. Be aware of diet mentality, traits, and thinking. The diet mentality surfaces in subtle forms, even when you decide to reject dieting. It's important to recognize common characteristics of the diet mentality. It will let you know if you are still playing the dieting game. Forget about willpower, being obedient, and failing. The general traits of how the dieter versus the non-dieter view eating, exercise, and progress are summarized by a chart at the end of this section. Forget willpower. While no doctor would expect a patient to will blood pressure to normal levels, physicians frequently expect their overweight patient to will their weight loss by restricting their food, according to Susan Z. Yanosky, M.D. This is also a prevailing attitude among our clients and many Americans. All you need is willpower and a little self-control. In a 1993 Gallup poll, the most common obstacle cited to losing weight by women was willpower. For example, Marilyn is a highly successful lawyer who climbed to the top of the corporate ladder. She credits her success with her determination, willpower, and self-discipline. Yet when she tried to use these exemplary principles in her dieting attempts, she always failed. Whatever success she had achieved in her professional life was dulled by her sense of failure with her eating. Why was Marilyn able to be so disciplined in one area of her life but not in the other? The word discipline derives from the word disciple. According to Stephen Covey's work, if you are a disciple to your own deep values that have an overriding purpose, it's likely that you'll have the will to carry them out. Marilyn believed deeply that writing exacting contracts and keeping immaculate records were requisites to building confidence with her clients and her law firm. But somehow, hearing that bread was wrong on one diet and anything with sugar was wrong on another did not engender the same kind of deep beliefs. Try as she might, she couldn't really believe that chocolate chip cookies were that evil. Willpower can be defined as an attempt to counter natural desires and replace them with proscriptive rules. It also implies the ability to do unpleasant tasks that are not essential. The desire for sweets is natural, normal, and quite pleasant. Any diet that tells you that you can't have sweets is going against your natural desire. The diet becomes a set of rigid rules, and these kinds of rules can only trigger rebellion. Willpower does not belong in intuitive eating. As Marilyn became an intuitive eater, she found that listening to her personal signals reinforced her natural instincts, rather than countering them. She had no one else's proscriptive rules to follow or to rebel against. Marilyn has stopped fighting the phantom willpower battle and has made peace with food and her body. Forget being obedient. A well-meaning suggestion by a spouse or significant other such as, "Honey, you should have the broiled chicken," or "You shouldn't eat those fries," can set off an inner food rebellion. In this type of food combat, your only arsenal to fight back becomes a double order of fries. Our clients call this "forget you" eating. In physics, resistance always occurs as a reaction to force. We see this principle in action in society. Riots often erupt when the force of authority becomes too great. Similarly, the simple act of being told what to do, even if it's something you want to do, can trigger a rebellious chain reaction. Just like terrible 2-year-olds or teenagers who revolt to prove they are independent, dieters can initiate rebellious eating in response to the act of dieting, with its set of rigid rules. And so, it's not surprising to hear from our clients that breaking the rules of a diet makes them feel just like they did when they were defiant teens. But take heart. Rebellion is a normal act of self-preservation, protecting your space or personal boundaries. Think of a personal boundary as a tall brick fence surrounding you with only one gate. Only you can open that gate, if you choose. Therefore, no one is allowed inside unless you invite the person in. Within your fence reside private feelings, thoughts, and biological signals. People who assume they know what you need and tell you what to do are picking the lock to your gate or invading your boundaries. Remember, nobody can be the expert of you. Only you know your thoughts, feelings, and experiences. No one could possibly know what's inside unless you tell him by inviting him in. What diet or diet counselor can possibly know when you are hungry or how much food it will take to satisfy you? How can anyone but you know what texture and taste sensations will be pleasing to your palate? In the world of dieting, personal boundaries are crossed at many levels. For example, you are told what to eat, how much of it to eat, and when to eat it. These decisions should all be personal choices with respect for individual autonomy and body signals. While food guidance may come from elsewhere, you should ultimately be responsible for the when, what, and how much of eating. When a diet doctor or a diet plan invades your boundaries, it's normal to feel powerless. The longer you follow the food restrictions, the greater the assault to your autonomy. Here is where the paradox lies. When dieting, you will likely rebel by eating more to restore your autonomy and protect your boundaries. But the act of rebelling can make you feel as out of control as a city riot. Instead, you have an inner food fight on your hands. But once the food rebellion is unleashed, its intensity reinforces feelings of lack of control and the belief that you don't possess willpower. Ultimately, you begin to drown in a sea of self-doubt and shame. What begins as a psychologically healthy behavior ends in disaster. Ultimately, a healthy relationship with food and your body is sabotaged as a result of personal boundary protection. With intuitive eating, there will be no need to rebel because you become the one who is finally in charge. Boundaries are also invaded when someone makes comments about your weight or how you should look. Again, you are bound to rebel by overeating. It's a way of saying, forget you, once again. And you have no right to tell me what to weigh. Rachel is an artist who had dieted all of her life. She was married to a successful lawyer who wanted to show off his beautiful, slim wife to all of his colleagues. He would continually make subtle remarks that she wasn't as thin as she could be. He would even go so far as to give her dirty looks when she would reach for a rich dessert at a party. Rachel rebelled against her husband by sneaking foods behind his back, free from his evil eye. While going through the intuitive eating process, Rachel discovered that she was actually keeping extra weight on as the ultimate form of rebellion toward her husband. But instead of feeling strong and powerful from her rebellion, she found that she actually felt weak, out of control, and miserable. She knew that she would feel better if she ate according to her body's hunger and fullness signals, but something kept making her turn to the hidden extra foods. Rachel had been trapped in a game of control, boundary invasion, and rebellion all her life. Her husband and the world of dieting had been trying to control this free-spirited woman. To protect her boundaries, she would fight the diets by overeating and fight her husband's inappropriate demands by staying overweight. Eventually, Rachel stood up to her well-meaning husband and told him that he had no right to make comments about her food or her weight. Although initially resistant, he began to respect her boundaries. She also made a firm commitment to give up dieting. As a result, Rachel was shocked to find that her secret eating disappeared, as did her self-doubt. And she began to eat less by listening to her intuitive signals. Forget about failure. All of our chronic dieters walk into our offices feeling as if they are failures, whether they are highly placed executives, prominent celebrities, or straight-A students. They all talk about their food experiences shamefully, and they doubt whether they'll ever be able to feel successful in the area of eating. The diet mentality reinforces feelings of success or failure. You can't fail at intuitive eating. It's a learning process at every point along the way. What used to be thought of as a setback will instead be seen as a growth experience. You'll get right back on track when you see this as progress, not failure. Step 3. Get rid of the dieter's tools. The dieter relies on external forces to regulate his eating, sticking to a regimented food plan, eating because it's time, or eating only a specified and measured amount, whether hungry or not. The dieter also validates progress by external forces, primarily the scale, asking, how many pounds have I lost? Is my weight up or down? It's time to throw out your dieting tools. Get rid of the meal plans and the food and bathroom scales. If all it took was a good, sensible, calorie-restricted meal plan to lose weight, we'd be a nation of thin people. Free meal plans are readily available from magazines, newspapers, the internet, and even some food companies. The scale as false idol. Please, please let the number be. This wishful number prayer is not occurring in the casinos of Las Vegas, but in private homes throughout the country. But just like a desperate gambler waiting for his lucky number to come in, so is it futile for the dieter to pay homage to the scale god. In one sweep of the scale roulette, hopes and desperation combine to form a daily drama that will ultimately shape what mood you'll be in for the day. Ironically, a good or bad scale number can both trigger overeating, whether it's a congratulatory eating party or a consolation party. The scale ritual sabotages body and mind efforts. It can, in one moment, devalue days, weeks, and even months of progress, as illustrated with Connie. Connie had been working very hard at intuitive eating and refrained from weighing herself, which in itself had been a feat, since she originally weighed in daily and sometimes even twice a day at home. But Connie felt she had made so much progress in 3 months that she was certain she had lost a significant amount of weight. To confirm her progress, Connie stepped on the scale. But the number of pounds that she lost was disappointing compared to how great she felt. The momentary brush with the scale boomeranged Connie right back to the diet mentality. That week, Connie cut back on her food intake, which resulted in a large binge. Stepping on the scale was a step back into the diet mentality. It was no surprise that Connie countered her scale experience with a dieting approach. She also thought, I must be doing something wrong. Her newfound trust began to erode, all with a single trip to the scale. So much power is given to the almighty scale that it ultimately sabotages our efforts. But in the case of Sherry, she found the weighing process to be so humiliating that she had postponed going to the doctor for 15 years. At the age of 55, Sherry had not had a mammogram or other essential physical exams because she did not want to be weighed at the doctor's office, although she weighed in at home daily. In this case, the scale was getting in the way of Sherry's health. She was at risk for breast cancer because it ran in her family. Getting the mammogram was more important than any number on the scale, but Sherry couldn't face the routine admonishments from the nursing staff. It was standard procedure, weigh the patient regardless of the reason for the appointment. Sherry did not realize that she had the right to refuse to be weighed. She finally got the courage after our work together. She made a doctor's appointment and refused to be weighed, since it was not an essential component of her medical care at the moment. Fortunately, her physical exam results were healthy. We have found that the weigh-in factor usually detracts from a person's progress. In the old days, when we used to weigh all patients, we found that sessions were often spent on why the weight went up or did not move at all, and they became scale counseling sessions. Our patients also dreaded the weighing in part as much as we did. When a pound is not a pound. Many factors can influence a person's weight, though not reflect a person's body fat. For example, 2 cups of water weighs 1 pound. If you tend to retain water or bloat, the scale can easily rise a few pounds without a change in what you have eaten. But for the oft-guilt-ridden dieter, the consequences of water weight can seem severe. For example, we have had many patients feel bad about eating an extra dessert over the weekend and weigh themselves on the following Monday. The scale shoots up 5 pounds, and they believe they gained 5 pounds of fat. We explain to them that it is impossible for this one dessert to cause a true 5-pound weight increase. So how do you explain the weight gain? Water weight. Anytime the scale suddenly rises or falls, it is usually because of a fluid shift in the body. Many factors can influence fluid retention, hormones, excessive sodium intake, and even the weather. Yet how easily chronic dieters believe they did something wrong. They must have single-handedly gobbled 5 pounds worth of food. No, no, no. Similarly, losing 2 pounds immediately from an hour of aerobics is not a 2-pound fat loss. Rather, it's mostly water loss from sweat. Jubilant dieters who think that they have lost 10 pounds in a week might be in for an unwanted surprise. While it may be true that the scale indicated 10 pounds less than when they weighed 1 week before, the question is, what kind of weight did they lose? To lose 10 pounds of fat in 1 week requires an enormous energy deficit. The sad reality is that this person is losing a lot of water weight, usually at the expense of muscle wasting. Muscle is made up of mainly water, 70%. When a hungry body is not given enough calories, the body cannibalizes itself for an energy source. The prime directive of the body is that it must have energy at any cost. It's part of the survival mechanism. The protein in muscles is converted to valuable energy for the body. When a muscle cell is destroyed, water is released and eventually excreted. There's your precious weight loss. The whittled away muscle contributes to lowering your metabolism. Muscles are metabolically active tissue. Generally, the more muscle we have, the higher our metabolic rate. That's one of the reasons men burn more calories than women. They have more muscle mass. Increased muscle mass, while metabolically more active and desirable, weighs more than fat. Muscle also takes up less space than fat. While this is certainly beneficial, a chronic dieter often gets frustrated by the rising or unchanging scale number. The scale does not reflect body composition. Just like weighing a piece of steak at the butcher's does not tell you how lean the meat is. Weighing in on the scale only serves to keep you focused on your weight. It doesn't help with the process of getting back in touch with intuitive eating. Constant weigh-ins can leave you frustrated and impede your progress. Best bet? Stop weighing yourself. Step 4. Be compassionate toward yourself. When the world around you is dieting and euphoric about how weight is melting away as a result of the latest diet craze, it's understandable that you can get pulled in. But this pull is more than just aesthetics. In her book, The Religion of Thinness, Harvard-trained theologian and scholar Michelle M. Lelwicka makes a compelling argument about how the endless pursuit of thinness through dieting fulfills a spiritual hunger. The pursuit of dieting serves as an ultimate purpose by providing a set of myths to believe regarding the rewards of thinness, offering rituals to organize the daily lives of women, creating a moral code of which to live and eat by, creating a common bond and a community for women. When you consider these covert benefits of dieting, no wonder you can get seduced by the rewards of dieting. Don't beat yourself up for entertaining fantasies of trying one more diet or just wanting to diet. It takes a while to let go of this desire. Even when you intellectually understand that the pursuit of dieting is truly futile. Intuitive eating tools. The tools of the intuitive eater are internal cues, not outside forces telling you what, when, and how much to eat. But to acquire and understand these internal cues, you need a new set of power tools, rather, empowerment tools, which will be discussed in the following chapters. Summary: the diet mentality versus the non-diet mentality. Issue: eating and food choices. Dieting mentality: do I deserve it? If I eat a heavy food, I try to find a way to make up for it. I feel guilty when I eat heavy foods. I usually describe a day of eating as either good or bad. I view food as the enemy. Non-diet mentality: am I hungry? Do I want it? Will I be deprived if I don't eat it? Will it be satisfying? Does it taste good? I deserve to enjoy eating without guilt. Issue: exercise benefits. Dieting mentality: I focus primarily on the calories burned. I feel guilty if I miss a designated exercise day. Non-diet mentality: I focus primarily on how exercise makes me feel, especially the energizing and stress-relieving factors. Issue: progress is viewed as dieting mentality. How many pounds did I lose? How do I look? What do other people think of my weight? I have good willpower. Non-diet mentality: rather than being concerned with my weight, I trust that my weight will normalize when I am attuned to my internal eating signals. My weight is not my primary goal or an indicator of my progress. I have increased trust with myself and food. I am able to let go of eating indiscretions. I recognize inner body cues. A diet is a diet is a diet. Whether you count calories or points, even so-called sensible weight loss programs such as Weight Watchers use the tools of dieting. People often express surprise when they hear that counting points is a dieting behavior. That's when we will gently ask, what do you do if you are hungry and your points are used up? The reply to this question is usually, oh, how did you know? Which is followed by a deep sigh. Deconstructing Weight Watchers. Any way you look at it, Weight Watchers is a diet in every aspect. Here are six examples. 1. The focus on points pulls one away from internal signals of hunger and fullness. 2. The points become obsessional. For years after someone gets off of Weight Watchers, the points stay embedded in the brain to haunt him or her. 3. It encourages overeating. If you can eat as much as you want of vegetables in the old days and fruits now, it promotes eating to push away feelings, eating of foods that give false fullness signals, and substituting these foods for foods that might be more satisfying. 4. It promotes the concept of good and bad foods. Foods that have a low amount of points become the good foods, and vice versa. 5. If there are points left over at the end of the day, the person will be apt to eat beyond need because she doesn't want to waste the points. 6. If a person is hungrier one day than the allowed points, She either has to starve or eat beyond her points. This promotes feeling guilty for going beyond and or the intention to make up the points the next day. If able to do this, it leads once again to semi-starvation, restricting, or not being able to